From the land of the free and the home of the Chiefs, with two-man coverage of the red and gold, this is the Locked On Chiefs Podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
And we're back for a Tuesday version of Locked On Chiefs, and it's been kind of a whirlwind. There's been a lot going on, but today we have Seth from The Athletic. You know where he's at. How are you, bud?
I'm doing really well, Ryan. How's life treating you?
You know, I'm grinding it out. That's all I can say right now. I'm behind, sure. And I'm trying to catch up.
Oh, I feel like you just described the last year of my life, and I agree. That's life. What we really need to do, Ryan, I've been thinking about this. I've given this a lot of thought over the course of the last 3 seconds. And what we really need to do is find out one of our listeners of the Locked On Chiefs, or the Locked On Chief in the North, as I apparently like to call it. One of them has to be independently wealthy, right?
Sure, I guess.
I mean, one of you guys, so whoever's listening, just so you know, Ryan and I, if you provide us with the right economic opportunity, we'll absolutely quit our full-time jobs. I'm speaking for you, Ryan, by the way.
Thank you.
We will absolutely quit our full-time jobs and do nothing but provide you with a two-hour daily podcast on the Chiefs. I will write two articles every day. We will just be crazy. But, you know, you're going to have to pay us a lot of money. Ryan, you're on board with that, right?
I might be. Mrs. RGR Football is not going to be.
Yeah, Mrs. Minnesota Chiefs fan, she might have a thing or two to say about it. But, you know, that's why I said independently wealthy. This has to be a very wealthy person. So the money has to be attractive enough to convince our wives. And so when I say independently wealthy, I don't mean like, you know, you drive a nice car. I mean like private jet wealthy. So
We're just talking Gulfstreams.
Yep. Whoever you are, Mr. Gulfstream, contact me. Throw me a DM on Twitter. You know, I'm willing to chat with you and enter into negotiations about this on behalf of Ryan, because that's what I'm doing today. Anyway.
That's so gracious of you. Thanks.
I do what I can for my friends.
Oh, well, you know, and maybe they'll like the conversation, because one thing that I wanted to touch back on, because it kind of blew up real fast in Kansas City and then faded away, obviously. And it leaves me with a couple of questions, and that's the supplemental draft.
Yes.
There's so much hype
about,
oh, the Chiefs have to take Sam Beal. They got to put in a second-round pick. And I got a lot of static, honestly, on Twitter for a show we did, you know, leading up to it. I think it was last Monday or whatever.
Okay.
That I was like, you know, a guy's in the supplemental draft for a reason. There's been a mistake made somewhere, and I didn't think that anywhere near a second round pick was worth that. And honestly, I wouldn't have used a third round pick either. Were you in on Sam Beal, or was it just, oh, if it happened, I'll look at his film?
You know, I only looked at him just a very little bit. There's not a lot available, at least from what I could find to look at. And I talked to a few people that I really trust, and they seemed to think he was a pretty good prospect. And so I was okay with the idea, considering the weakness of the position. But I do think this was one of those cases of, we want something shiny and new and now. I from what I heard, he's a solid player, probably would have been a late second or third round pick in the draft. And you know what? I really admire the fact that, you know, because the mistake that got made, from his version of it at least, is that he was going to complete school. Then he found out he might be academically ineligible, but he wasn't sure. So he just declared for the supplemental draft, because he wouldn't know until like fall. And so I'm not going to really nick a guy for that, because that's not really off-field troubles. That's obviously something got mixed up there. But here's the deal. Because he's probably the best supplemental draft prospect to come along, and, you know, I mean, Josh Gordon was a better player, but, you know, he had all those red flags. I think people were viewing him a little differently than they would have had he been in the draft. You know what I mean? He would have been one of multiple guys. They're like, oh, yeah, I'd be okay with that guy. But instead, because, you know, he's being compared to, you know, almost no one, it's like, oh, this is a we got to have him guy. So I'm kind of back and forth. I would have loved to see them address corner, but we know Brett Veach is crazy aggressive. And so I assume if they'd really liked Beal or Adonis, I'm assuming they would have grabbed them, because they had every opportunity to.
Yeah, I kind of feel the same way. And that tells me a lot, both about where they had the two players evaluated, but also how they have the evaluations on the rest of the roster here. And My thing is, I got that story about Beal, and that's fine. But quite honestly, if you were waiting to find out whether you were academically eligible or not,
sure,
then you hadn't been going to class enough to be sure. You see what I mean?
Right.
So,
yep, yeah, and academic probation is a serious thing to an extent where you just don't know. And that does concern me, especially with a guy talking about, well, I wanted to stay in school to graduate. Well, I get that and I respect that, but it's weird to me that someone whose main goal is to graduate from college is also doing poorly enough to where they might not be academically. You know, I don't know. Again, you know, eligible versus on track to graduate are two different things.
For sure.
So the whole thing is just a little confusing. But again, my main thing is I think he has a good shot at being a decent player, but I'm not going to weep too much. Now, I wish they had addressed corner earlier in the draft, for sure. They had a few guys they passed on. Mm-hmm. But I don't think Beal was necessarily a better prospect than those guys. So I think that's the reason people are so upset. Again, it's the shiny new thing. There's no one else new. I wanted them to take someone just so I had some new film to really review. But, you know, I think from what I'm hearing, they're comfortable with the guys they have. Now, the one thing that a couple people have brought up is the idea that, you know, Steven Nelson and David Amerson, even in the best case scenario, if they have good seasons, which they might, they're both free agents.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think some people viewed it as like a long-term investment to where next year you'd have a corner who's been in the system for a year who has some talent. And I think that's a good point because I'm curious about corner next year. Unless Tremont Smith or someone else like really surprises, they're going to be either one or two things will happen. Amerson and Nelson will not have very good years to where it's like, meh. Or they'll have good years and they're going to cost quite a bit of money.
Yeah, and that's
– There's not a lot in between there with free agency.
Yeah, I completely agree. Let's take a quick second. We'll come back. We'll talk about them in depth as well as the guys behind them. So like you were saying, two guys in contract years. We've talked ad nauseum. Folks, if you haven't heard us discuss the the trepidation about David Amerson in particular and this whole thing about these two running the outside with Fuller in the slot, go back. I think we touched on that in both April and March. So.
Right.
Bottom line, I like what you said, that it would have been nice for them to address that a little bit quicker in the draft when they had some more options available.
Right, because right now you are relying on hope. And I get that. You know, my colleague at The Athletic, Nate Taylor, who one of these days we got to have on here because he's just a blast to talk to.
Yeah.
He wrote a really nice article about Steven Nelson recently. Just talking about how Nelson, you know, from his point of view, he plans on being part of the solution this year. And here's the interesting thing about Nelson. He played pretty well in 2016. Mm-hmm. Like coming into 2017, Chiefs fans were pretty excited about him. Well, then he got hurt. And unfortunately, as is often the case, when you get hurt, you know, your first few games back don't necessarily go very smoothly. And Cole Beasley victimized him in his second or third game back.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, hey, Cole Beasley's a tough cover. And I still think he was working his way back. Down the stretch, like if you watch the Titans game, I thought Nelson did a really nice job. He wasn't, you know, what did Nate write? It was really good writing. I'm sometimes envious of the guy. He wrote, you know, Steven Nelson wasn't missing tackles on Derrick Henry. Steven Nelson wasn't allowing receivers to run open.
Mm-hmm.
Like the defensive failures, because people tend to lump everyone on the defense together when there's a defensive failure, but that's just not true.
Yeah.
And he was arguably one of the better players on the field that day. And unfortunately, you know, he doesn't get a lot of credit for that. So I think there's reasons to hope for Steven Nelson. But with David Amerson, I'm a lot more like,
That's kind of where
I am. If that noise. Okay. You're at,
Almost. I can't get quite there, but yeah. But I mean.
Oh, wow. You're not even there. Oh.
My big problem is when I look back at what the Raiders did in 2017, and I just did this last week for RGR. So folks, if you want to see that, jump over to YouTube. It's in the show notes. They only ran 24% man coverage in 2017. The Raiders did, where Amerson was playing.
Yep.
That's it.
Yep.
And honestly,
yep.
I watched three games, and I saw him lose more than win, even playing off man and zone. So I'm concerned about this concept that we're going to have him press 90% of the time. You're going to see him get beat 80% of the time. So
you know, he definitely looked better when keeping the play in front of him. Mm-hmm. And that's something Ian Wharton and I have talked about. And Ian Wharton, if people don't follow him, he's like NFL film study or something on Twitter. And he is it when it comes to corners.
Yeah.
Like he's the guy, he does the cornerback manual. I don't know if you bought that this year.
I do
it
every
is
year.
So good. Yeah. Oh my goodness. It makes me feel so bad about my own work. I'm just like, man, why don't I just copy and paste this? Oh wait, that's plagiarism. Dang it. But it's such great stuff. And he kind of said when they signed Amerson, he said, look, you know, Amerson has some talent. If he's put in a position to keep the play in front of him and make plays on the ball, you're going to like what he does a lot of the time. But, you know, this idea of him in press man, and that's the interesting thing because he's a big-bodied guy.
Mm-hmm. He's got good length.
So you'd think, yeah, he's got good length. Pretty, you know, I don't think he's very quick, but he's a little shifty. He can move a little. I think the difference between him and, say, like Sean Smith is Smith, at least with the Chiefs, was a little smoother.
Mm-hmm.
And that's important when you're a big body guy who's trying to redirect receivers. I will say, you know, I mean his thing was if you want him to turn and run with guys and mirror routes, you know, he's not Kendall Fuller, at least what we saw from Fuller in 2017.
Mm-hmm.
So that I think I'm concerned too, for sure. And so I want to see what it looks like. One thing I will say is the Raiders defensive back coaches, as far as I can tell, absolutely suck.
Yeah, well, I mean, For all the hype of Carl Joseph, I have to agree with you.
Right. I mean, if you look at, I mean, I while I was reviewing Amerson's film, I started watching like Sean Smith. I started watching the other guys. I'm like, God, these guys can't cover anyone. Now, again, some of it is just more of matchup issues and blah, 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 blah. But I mean, without knowing specifically what they were being asked to do, it does give me pause when Sean Smith can have, what was it, three good years in a row here in Kansas City. Or was it four even? Because he left after 2000.
It was three.
He left out. Yeah, he had three good years, and then he leaves, and he's just terrible.
Yeah, falls apart.
And that makes me wonder, especially when you consider the potential similarities in their game. What are they coaching them up to do there? And again, that's pure speculation. But again, even if it's very much hopes and dreams because there's no other corner on the roster besides Amerson and Nelson that I'm even remotely comfortable with. And I'm not really that comfortable with Amerson. I'm comfortable with Steven Nelson. I'm not, and I feel bad saying it this way, I'm not thrilled about Steven Nelson, but I'm comfortable with him.
Yeah, I agree. He's a known quantity, and you know you're going to get effort out of him, and you know that what he can and can't do. He's going to get run away from time to time.
Right.
That's true. But when we look beyond that, then it gets really to be a question mark, right? Because we're talking Keith Reeser, who played some snaps in 2017. Okay. Technically, if you're really desperate and nobody else steps up, you could probably put Eric Murray back in a dime corner kind of position because that's what he did in college.
Yeah.
But then you're talking the rookie Tremont Smith, the rookie Arian Springs, Ashton Lampkin, and Will Redmond. Guys with talent, but young.
Well, yeah, I know Redmond is one that a lot of Chiefs fans are hoping does something because he was a high round pick back in the day.
Yeah,
a couple years ago, which to me, point. You know, that and again, I know Redmond is one that a lot of people have talked about and he apparently has talent. But, you know, being a high round pick and 50 cents combined is worth half a dollar.
Exactly. That's
and so we'll see. I mean, I hope to be dead wrong. It would be great because every now and then you see guys emerge and, you know, sometimes they just don't get it. And with corners and secondary players in particular, it seems like scheme and usage matter so much. Like Joyner, the free safety for the Rams. I mean, the year prior to Wade Phillips coming to town, no one talked about that guy.
Because he was on the roster bubble like the season before that, right? So
right, and he was a little used slot corner, and mm-hmm. suddenly Wade Phillips says, "No, I'm putting this dude at free safety," and uses him very differently, and suddenly he has a great year. And so, I mean, we'll kind of see, but I've got a lot of trepidation there with regards to the depth, especially because I mean, let's say because Kendall Fuller, I've got a lot of confidence in. I love his 2017 film. And everything I've heard about him from a couple of former teammates, just like, this dude just works and works and works. And he's going to, and I mean, he's got such quick feet. I mean, I've gushed about him here before, and I know you have too. But what if he gets hurt?
Yeah, and, exactly.
And then we're trotting out Nelson and Amerson and question mark. And I, that's just, it, it does make me nervous. Because of the lack of depth as well. Now, again, they must have a plan because they didn't address corner until Smith. And I know they like Tremont Smith, but I don't think anyone's expecting him to play this year.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe the Chiefs are. Who knows? But that's a lot of hope and dreams at this point.
Confidence is one thing, but you can't buy goods with confidence.
Right.
Let's take a second, and we'll cut to the chase about the future. So before we wrap this up on this particular position group, like, here's what I think. And that is that, like you said, they got a lot of dice rolling going on behind the scenes.
Right.
I still think that there's going to be an acquisition, either a roster cut or a trade in this preseason. We've seen Veach be aggressive, and I think this is the one position group that he needs to be, like you said, in case of a single injury to any of the top three, they're in a world of hurt.
I agree. I keep waiting to hear that they're going to sign Breshad Breeland, who played vast majority of his snaps in zone in Washington, but so did David Amerson in Oakland, and I think Breeland's a better corner than Amerson. And I understand concern with injuries and all that, but, you know, so? You got to add someone.
Right, yeah, right?
Yeah. I mean,
you got to add someone.
I had no argument there for a second. I was like, you know, and so, I mean, and again, I noticed Breeland when I was reviewing Kendall Fuller's film. And, I mean, he didn't stand out as, like, great. But you know what? He played pretty well.
And he's a guy that could get signed going into camp.
Right. And so someone like that. And the problem is, like, with aggressive moves and stuff outside of Breeland, usually you just don't have corners that are available if they're any good whatsoever.
Yeah.
Because they're too valuable a commodity.
Yeah, I'm a bit concerned, I have to say.
Right. And so, I mean, we'll see. It just depends on what they plan on doing. If they plan on one thing that I could see them doing, because right now, here's the interesting thing. I would argue that the top three corner group is as talented as it was to end the season last year. Maybe more talented. You know, Nelson's the same. Peters and Fuller, people don't want to hear my opinion on that because I like Fuller too much. But and then I think Amerson is much more talented than any other corner the Chiefs had on the roster last year. It's just a question of who shows up and how he plays. But one thing I keep coming back to is how well executed the second Oakland game was by the corners and by the secondary. Now, they were helped out by the pass rush actually showing up and a few other things. But part of me just wonders, that game, they did a ton of pressing, and they were way more aggressive with the pass rush than they had been previously. And it was almost like they tried something different because they knew Marcus Peters was out. They knew they were facing a defense or an offense that had shredded them the previous matchup. I mean, Carr threw for, like, you know, 9,000 yards the first game. I don't remember how many it was, but, you know, it was give or take 9,000.
It was good.
Yeah. And so I'm curious. That's one thing that has me sitting here thinking. If they are able to properly execute a more simplified scheme where they just say, okay, look, here's the deal. You know, Amerson, we want you to maybe not necessarily do press, as in, like, jamming, but we want you to kind of do what Smith used to do and kind of redirect guys with your body a couple yards off the line of scrimmage. I think he can do that a little better than he can, like, actually jam. Or maybe that's all they're working with him. I have no idea. But I mean, if they can.
Well, and Bob doesn't jam anyway. I mean, he's been notorious his time in Kansas City about not actually putting hands on receivers.
Absolutely. And you notice that guys playing, because everyone talks about that, and it's such an oversimplification. You just got to press. You just got to press. That is not the magic silver bullet that just stymies offenses. Because, I mean, good receivers have ways of getting around that. We've watched Hill do that. We've seen, you know, in my film review, Watkins. We watch Watkins do that. Because if you miss, part of the problem with jamming is that you are necessarily, you're reaching out and you're going to have some forward momentum, which means if you miss, you are
hooked. Oh, yeah. You're behind on the route instantly.
Yep. And against certain receivers, you're done. And Amerson doesn't have the kind of catch-up speed to recover from that. Right. So my here's my hope is when I watch that game and I see a more simplified, more aggressive game plan, which is, again, I'm really oversimplifying the way I'm describing it here. That's kind of my hope for next season is that they say, look, we've gotten a little too cute at times on defense. We're going to get back to we're going to be aggressive. And if we lose to big plays, because they used to give up big plays, and then the last couple of years we've seen like an overcorrection of that, right? It used to be the defense was pretty good, but they would give up some big plays. Then the defense kind of became like these last couple of years, they, you know, they hardly ever gave up big plays, but they weren't great at stopping people. And then last year, a little bit of both. and so, I mean, I'm hoping they say, well, look, we're giving up these big plays anyway. Let's be aggressive, try to create a couple of turnovers, try to force some bad plays, and then count on our offense, which looks like a top five offense, to carry the day if we're able to create a few turnovers and just be aggressive in general. Let's set the tone rather than just trying to bend but not break.
Yeah, I'm hopeful to see that as well. Let's hope that they are on track for that. And folks, that's going to do it for us today. We'll be back. We'll keep an eye on this. There's going to be some rumors camp opens. We'll see how they all fare. But Seth, thanks for hanging out, and we'll talk to you next time.
It sounds good, man. Good to talk to you.
And folks, that's it for us today. We have some great interviews coming up. We're going to talk with Brent Coleman here coming up in the next week or two. Matt Derrick will be back with us. Tons of stuff coming. So keep your ears peeled, and we will talk to you tomorrow.
Thanks for listening to the Locked On Chiefs podcast. While you're out there, give us a rating or review and reach out to us on Twitter @RyanTreseyNFL and @ChrisClarkNFL. We'll talk to you next time.